My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
Stripe is the go-to choice for AI companies, from early-stage startups to scaled enterprises. 78% of the leading AI companies use Stripe to go to market quickly and scale globally. That includes pioneers like NVIDIA, OpenAI, and Perplexity. Stripe has developed cutting-edge tools to improve everything from fraud detection to checkout optimization. Whether you're aiming for incremental gains or planning for enterprise transformation, see how Stripe can help at stripe.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
To kick things off here in PJ O'Brien's, actually PJ O'Brien's, I should mention, because anybody Irish who spent any time in Toronto will know PJ O'Brien's. It is something of a, how will we describe it? A cultural center, an unofficial cultural center for the Irish in this part of the world. And it's just on the edge between kind of downtown, the businessy side of Toronto, and the old town over on this side, the kind of eastern side of the city, which is a beautiful, beautiful part of the city, it has to be said. It's a part of the city that I know one of my guests here knows well, Joe Callaghan. Joe is a features and sports writer. People will read him in the Toronto Star and elsewhere. And Jess Kelly, our own technology correspondent, who has been with us here on this trip as well. Jess, we might kick things off with you, and just in terms of the mission, Ireland Gateway to Europe, for people who are just joining us, because, you know, I appreciate Bank Holiday Mondays. We were broadcasting yesterday. Shame on everybody who didn't hear us. But listen, I know people are busy on a Bank Holiday Monday. So for people who are just tuning in, what is it? Why are we here?
So this is a trade mission that's been running for well over a decade. It got started when things were a little bit bleak and we were trying to sort of replace Ireland on the map and show it as a place of opportunity. We have been involved in this for the last number of years. People might remember us trying to find bats in Austin, Texas last year.
Didn't find them.
Didn't find the bats.
Found a raccoon this morning.
Found
a raccoon. Yeah, Bert raccoon. Yeah, over at St. James's Park at the Anglican Church, Bert Raccoon.
I'm amazed you didn't put that in the WhatsApp group. Some of the other drivel that we
got a photo.
Okay.
It'll be up on my Instagram later.
Okay, good. Hashtag content. So yeah, we are here. What's interesting, right? So for all the years that this trip has been going on, it's been very much focused on the United States of America. We have traveled around to different cities over the last few years. I mentioned Austin, and we've been to Boston, we've been to Chicago, we've been all over the place. But this is the first time that they have come to Canada. And as you said there, it is incredible timing, because when Gateway hosted a launch event for this a few weeks back, I was chatting to Deirdre Giblin, who has very close ties to Toronto. She is in Canada quite a bit, and she was giving me the sense that there's a bit of sadness, a bit of frustration, a bit of anger here on the ground in this country about how the United States, and particularly President Donald Trump, has behaved, has, you know, the talk of tariffs, even in the last 48 hours, it's been more that I'm sure we'll talk about in a few minutes' time. So it's incredible for us to be here on the ground and get a sense of what's going on. I was talking to Pat Kenny this morning, and I said to him, you know, I went out for lunch yesterday, and I was talking to a few people in the restaurant, and they were talking about the tariffs and Trump and watching their grocery bills and all that sort of stuff. The fear seems a bit more palpable here than I thought it would be. In the past, when we've been in America around times of election or big events, you don't get the sense that the average punter is fully engaged in the news cycle. Like, we're news junkies, right? So we're following it every second of the day. But the conversations that I've had in the time that we've been here have been quite eye-opening, because people are interested. So later on after the show, I'm heading down to the Ireland-Canada Chamber of Commerce. I'm going to speak to some of the businesses there, showcase the opportunities, because Ireland really is, since Brexit in particular, the gateway into Europe for an awful lot of the businesses. The fact that we are an English-speaking country, we play HQ to a lot of the big tech companies, we are very vocal, very friendly and very open to businesses looking to set themselves up in our country. So I'm very excited to sort of see what the tone of the conversations are down in that Chamber of Commerce.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to talk to you about some of the other conversations we've been having with the delegates here, because I know it kind of Trump is the big context to this piece to a degree. But what struck me is how many people are talking about AI and everything as well. And it reminds me all of something Mark Little said to me a few weeks ago. He suspects when we look back on this period of time, no one's going to mention Trump or trade deals. We're all going to talk about AI as the inflection point. But anyway, Joe Callaghan, who I mentioned, is with us as well. Joe, this Mark Carney meeting is happening on its way to the White House. And I know, listen, as a Sligo man, you'd have been well aware of the conversation that was had in Ireland before Micheál Martin's trip, you know, just go over. This was just after Zelensky, so there was a real sense of go over, don't say anything, don't get shouted at, and just survive. What's the expectation here? What do people want Mark Carney to do?
I think the one word on the front page of the Toronto Star this morning was modest expectations. So there isn't a kind of a huge expectation that he's going to go in there and lay down the law. What's interesting, when you mentioned Micheál Martin, one of the Canadian diplomats that was quoted this morning in the Toronto Star in that piece said, we've talked to all of the delegations who've gone there and there's no clear thread. Like, you're not getting advice that's one clear through thought, like, go this way with it, bring a letter from the king, like Keir Starmer did, you know. But
technically Mark Carney could do it, but I guess it's been done now.
He's bringing the king over to kind of open parliament in a few weeks, so I think that's kind of enough favours to be asking of the king. But expectations aren't high. I don't think he's going to go in there and solve tariffs. I don't think he's going to go in there and get a deal, even though Trump said, I think he's coming to see me to get a deal. Everyone wants a deal. But what's interesting is for Carney seems to have, from the jump, got more respect from Trump than Justin Trudeau. Trudeau had a lot of the Governor Trudeau rhetoric, whereas that governor term has never been attached to Carney so far. Trump continued even just Sunday, as Jess was saying, when he was talking about a lot of different things. He brought in his new movie tariffs, which are a new thing for Canada. Huge issue here. There's a lot of movie industry here is worth billions of dollars. But Trump hasn't he sees Carney as a winner. And we have to remember, Trump just loves winners. Like, that's ultimately what it comes down to. We've had a week here where, in the space of a week, Australia and Canada have gone to the polls, and the expectations kind of 2 months out have been flipped on their head. And both occasions, Trump has been like, oh, I know the guy who's the winner. I've spoken to him. And he kind of speaks quite negatively against the loser. Peter Dutton was the loser in Australia, Pierre Poilievre here. And Trump goes, I don't really know that guy, you know? So that kind of addiction that he has to being associated with winners should work in Carney's favor. But Carney likes to say a plan is better than no plan, but with Trump, I don't sure how much you can plan for it anyway. You
know? And is there a prevailing view as to what the strategy, and maybe using the word strategy and Donald Trump in the same sentence is kind of oxymoronic, but you know, he announced kind of right in the get-go that first week, big tariffs in Mexico and Canada, and then immediately pared them back. And there was a feeling maybe, you know, this is all just, we shouldn't get distracted by all the noise. The signal in this is just a kind of a slightly more kind of favorable reinterpretation of NAFTA or something like that. You know, that was the benign view. I mean, is that prevailing still, that ultimately that's going to be the outcome, or are people worried about something more severe?
I think Jess touched on it. There is concern in the streets. There is kind of a worry. There is, people are locked into the news in a way they weren't before. Of course, the same issues that we have at home in terms of affordability and housing and these kind of issues were all part of the kind of general picture here nationally. But the last 2-3 months have brought the kind of American thing front and center. And Canada's economy wasn't thriving in a space, wasn't in a kind of thriving moment before the election. And people are worried about what the tariffs will do. We're already seeing some issues, particularly in the car industry. That's kind of part of it, because the tariffs on, I'm sure you've seen some of these brilliant graphics about kind of how a car is made and the pieces
come. We saw them back in 2016 after Brexit.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very similar. So there's definitely worries in that regard. Worries in terms of let's be just one for a quick moment self-indulgent. Worries about the Canadian dollar. If, like me, you're saving for a wedding in Sligo next year and you see the euro strengthen against the Canadian dollar, you're like, I think the cost of my wedding's gone up 10% since the tariffs came in. But yeah, so there are kind of a lot of different worries. But in general, you know, the prevailing kind of worries with the cost of living, it's just kind of how is that going to be exacerbated? But one other one, people are worried about even going there. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting to me. They have these people in Canada, particularly here in Ontario, that are known as snowbirds. They don't hang around for the winter. They go and they have a second home in Florida, or they'll do like a rental or something like that. And there's been a lot of travel sites that have kind of been tracking this, but the flights are way down in terms of Canadians spending their winter in Canada.
And then even, States, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, in the States, should I say. But there was even a very high profile case of a woman from Vancouver who went down to the States and was caught up by ICE. I don't know if you read that. She did a first-person piece in The Guardian 2 or 3 weeks ago. Fascinating. She ended up kind of in prison in a holding cell in Arizona or wherever it was, maybe kind of Louisiana for a little bit, for like 3 or 4 weeks, and just because of a technicality on her visa. And so I have... Here's an interesting one. With my Canadian mates, we do a boys' trip, which you shouldn't still be doing at 41, and go and see the Toronto Blue Jays at a stadium south of the border, kind of Cleveland, Pittsburgh, somewhere that's in driving distance. This year, we're doing a home game. We're not doing a road trip. And it's just purely because, well, it's two things. One, crossing the border is no longer straightforward. And two, we don't want to be going down there and spending Canadian dollars, is the prevailing thought amongst Canadians. Obviously, as a journalist, I have to go down there. I'll be down there next week for the PGA to see Rory McIlroy. But, you know, so work will take me down there. But, yeah, it's interesting that Canadians aren't going down there. There's a lot of kind of, I suppose we would remember it as COVID era stuff about holidaying at home.
Yeah.
There's a lot of holidaying at home here.
I want to come back to you about some of the other kind of non-Trump issues maybe that are prevailing in this part of the world in a moment. But just to pick up on that point we were talking about earlier. So AI is a kind of a big feature of all conversations, and a lot of it is just kind of, you know, kind of grasping about in the darkness, really, people unsure of what's happening. But there is a real sense with this kind of delegation that something big is happening, even if they're not quite sure what.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a disruptor. And what's really interesting is it's already started, but people can't get to grips in terms of interpreting and deciding what it means for them and their business and their sector. Quite a few of the companies that I've been chatting to over the last few days work in recruitment, for example. And AI it could cut down on the admin side of HR, recruitment, retention, employee well-being and happiness and all that kind of stuff. But you have to be so careful, because the inherent bias of the AI could lead to massive instances of discrimination. So we have seen this, we've had these conversations in terms of, you know, biometric data. So if you're going through an airport and your face is scanned or whatever it may be, those cameras are really good at identifying middle-aged white men. They struggle with everybody else, which is cool. But when it comes to HR...
Joe, you don't have a problem with that, do you? We're good.
Once you guys are happy, I'll just roll with it too. But the issue arises when you're using technology that is super smart and is trained on the way that people used to do things, and it's making split-second decisions based on somebody's surname, or based on somebody's address, or based on where they went to university, or if they went to university. And so the complexities of this software being utilized and making decisions that could implicate and impact people's chances of success in life and all the rest, it's deeply worrying. I also saw earlier on today, Duolingo has said that they're now going to be an AI first company, which is bananas. So they are now going to, any work that they were doing with contractors, they are now going to just delegate that to artificial intelligence. If you think of the number of contractors that a big organization like Duolingo would use, it's not good for the human workforce. Now, I always say this, and I feel like I have to say it again, it's good that we are based in Europe. So we have the EU AI Act, we have a whole host of legislation and regulation that will keep certain parameters in place. So for example, you're not allowed to use biometric data for the reasons I outlined in terms of bias and so on. But I do think later on, when I'm at that event in the Chamber of Commerce, I'll be really interested to see how businesses that have a HQ in Ireland and in Canada navigate that European legislation? You know, how do you try and make things roll out and successful and profitable for your business when you are dealing with two completely different jurisdictions?
Listen, we'll get feedback on terms of all of those conversations over the next few days from Jess, because it is one of the big issues here beyond Trump. But Joe, in terms of the big issues here in Canada beyond Trump, let's imagine he hadn't been re-elected and Canadians went to the polls then without that kind of spectre hanging over everything. What would have been the prevailing talking points in that election?
Well, the very helpful thing is we don't even have to imagine it, right? Because we knew Justin Trudeau was stepping down. That if you look at the graphs, I'm sure you've seen them back home, but let's just talk about the raw numbers. If Kamala Harris had been elected in November, the Conservatives here, Pierre Poilievre, were heading for a landslide of around a supermajority of around 260 seats. There are 348, I think, total. So it would have decimated the Liberal Party. And the reasons because of that, well, one was very personality-based in terms of Justin Trudeau, a bit like Jacinda Ardern down in New Zealand, where had that kind of progressive personality, but maybe hung on a little bit too long. Canadians were tired of him, but not just because of his personality, because of the same issues that we do see at home in terms of cost of living, housing. You're here in Toronto. I'm sure like you enjoyed your run this morning, but you may have seen there is a homelessness crisis here in Toronto. Whatever about this time of year, it's particularly pointed when you're here in winter and it's minus 25 Celsius and they're basically every warm air grate on the street is covered with a homeless person. There is a huge issue with housing in the big cities in Canada, Vancouver and Toronto particularly. Irish students who are going to spend their summer out here are going to see it. I remember when I came here first 10 years ago, prices weren't too bad then, but they have kind of gone through the roof again since. Now, there were so many layers to it, and Pierre Poilievre was kind of tapping into a general sense of kind of frustration with life, but obviously kind of Trump changed all of that. There are a few other issues. Public safety was one. You remember just on the eve of the election was a horrific attack in Vancouver. Mm. 11 or 12 killed, I think, in the end. That may or may not kind of in terms of kind of how it develops, but the early signs in terms of what the police were saying were, you know, mental health may have been an issue there. It is an issue kind of countrywide. Addiction issues here are big too. Fentanyl is a massive issue, particularly on the West Coast. They've tried so many progressive ways. In other provinces, they've tried maybe more archaic ways. Here in Ontario, they're shutting down safe consumption sites. It's become a big wedge issue. It's tricky though, because Canada's funny. The provinces hold so much power. Mm. Like Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario here, brother of once notorious mayor of Toronto, the late Rob Ford, who would be known to kind of a lot of people, he controls healthcare for pretty much the entire province. There are some small add-ons that the federal government can do. For instance, Justin Trudeau's greatest legacy might be a dental act, which has kind of spread dental care to a bunch of Canadians. But yeah, there was just a general unhappiness with a lot of things. And yet, in the space of a few weeks between December and January, it flipped. It flipped entirely. And if you took a walk through the Eaton Centre here, you will have seen all the T-shirts with elbows up and this kind of idea of kind of Canadian, it comes from hockey, put your elbows up and be ready for a fight with the Americans. That became the only issue that anyone wanted to talk about. But after this afternoon, and when Mark Carney walks out of the Oval Office, a lot of these issues are going to come to force now.
Well, after the break, we're going to be digging into one of those issues in particular, which is eerily resident of the issue at home, and is housing, because a lot of the problems in this part of the world mirror problems we experience in Ireland. So in the meantime, Joe, thanks a million for joining us. Joe Callaghan, who's a features and sports writer. You'll read him in the Toronto Star and elsewhere. Jess Kelly, our own technology correspondent. Jess, thank you. And we'll talk to you again later in the week from Boston, Massachusetts.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.